We'll start unpacking some of the stories from October, beginning with the issue of violence. October was Domestic Violence Awareness Month. The issue of sexual violence was brought into the national conversation as the confirmation hearings of eventual Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh came to a close. We also saw political violence. Suspicious packages were sent to high-profile critics of President Trump. A man shot and killed 11 Jews in a synagogue in Pittsburgh's historic Squirrel Hill neighborhood. In Northeast Indiana, one organization that is on the front lines of dealing with violence, especially domestic or intimate partner violence, is the YWCA. I'm joined in the studio now by Jennifer Rolfe, Director of Empowerment at the YWCA, and the organization's CEO, Paula Hughes Hsu. Paula Hughes Hsu, Jennifer Rolfe, welcome to WBOI Presents.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start by giving our listeners a little bit of background. What brought each of you to the YWCA?
So I've been at the YWCA for about 5.5 years now. And really what brought me there was the mission. I was graduating college looking for jobs, and it was really important to me to find a place to work that I believed in what they did. And right away when I saw the mission of eliminating racism and empowering women, I knew that that was covering some of my passions and things that I really cared about. And then it just kind of all fell into place when I saw a position for a community educator, and the rest is history. So I've been there for the past couple of years, and my position has changed over time, and I just continue to see new challenges and new needs that we need to serve in the community.
And I actually served on the board over 15 years ago, and I was approached last year when they were between CEOs. I had not considered applying, but the recruiter reached out to me and asked me to consider it. And I've always loved the organization and been passionate about the work they do, so it was a natural fit.
October was Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and looking at Northeast Indiana, how are we doing? Are instances of domestic violence down? Are they up? Are they static? And do we have enough reported data to know?
I think it's really hard to measure because domestic violence is so underreported, but we're definitely not seeing anything go down, that's for sure. I would say with numbers, crisis calls and amounts of clients going up, I think a big part of it is just awareness going up and the ability to be able to actually talk about the subject of domestic violence. Domestic violence is one of those things that has often remained a secret where people don't discuss it. It could be going on throughout their family for generations, and it's never really been talked about. And so I think we're finally at a time in the world where we are having these conversations. And so then people are seeking resources and help, hopefully, when they are experiencing that. And so the numbers definitely continue to climb, but I don't necessarily think that means that it's happening more. It's just that there's more awareness for help.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think that has been one of the gifts of this past year with everything that has been happening and been made so public, is that this is not a topic that's taboo anymore. It's not as much a topic of shame. There's still some of that affiliated with the topic, but I, for one, am very glad to see the increased reporting of it because it means that more people are willing to talk about it.
What services does your organization offer for those who have suffered some form of intimate partner violence, or for those who have dealt with it in their households, so parents and children?
We offer the full spectrum of services. So we have everything from a crisis shelter for anyone, men, women, and their children, if they have children, to have a safe place to live if they are fleeing from an abusive relationship. But we also have community-based support. So we realize that not everyone needs shelter. Lots of people have some kind of place to stay, whether it be their own home or staying with other people, but they do need support to navigate that situation. So we do have community-based case managers who will go out and meet with people where they are and try to provide them with support, navigating resources, just being someone to talk to, and also helping them stay safe. So getting protective orders and legal processes, helping them get that started. And then we also do have aftercare. Even once someone's left an abusive relationship, there's still a lot of healing to go through, a lot of trauma they're trying to overcome. And so we do have an aftercare program for people who have been at least 6 months removed from a domestic violence relationship and are now just trying to put everything back together. And aside from all of those services, we do education in the community as well.
Right. It's the full continuum. We do work on the front end. We are in the schools, even as young as elementary schools, elementary, middle, high schools, police departments, businesses, hospitals, talking about what is domestic violence, how can you spot it, how you can help somebody if you think they're a victim, and doing things to prevent it, to make people aware. But then also, obviously, all the crisis, being there in the crisis, being that point of healing, and then helping people get past it.
Most of America watched the confirmation battle for now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. For lack of a better term, there was an increase in traffic, I guess we could say, calls to sexual assault hotlines, people telling their own stories of sexual violence. Did your organization experience any kind of increase in traffic after Dr. Ford's testimony?
We absolutely did. One of the things we saw right away was immediately that weekend, the volume of calls to, you know, in addition to the domestic violence services, we have a rape crisis hotline, a sexual assault hotline, and that saw a 200% increase in calls that weekend. And that was not isolated to Northeast Indiana. We checked into it, and that was happening nationwide. It caused a lot of reminders. A lot of post-traumatic stress was coming out. People can tend to be triggered. There may be something that happens in your past and you bury it because that's maybe the emotionally healthy thing to do at the time. But then something like this happens and the memories flood back and people were surrounded by it and didn't know how to get a deal with it. So they reached out to us.
And I think this something that we've seen throughout any kind of news coverage of abuse or violence over the years. There's been a variety of different high profile cases of domestic violence or sexual assault or conversations around those topics. And every time that gets big headlines, then we see numbers go up, whether that be in our shelter, on our crisis line, in lots of different ways, because it's that reminder that you're not the only one. And for a lot of victims of any kind of violence and abuse, they feel that this is only me. And that no one else has experienced this. And so to see that there is someone else out there, they feel that ability to be able to come forward and start to finally talk about it.
It brought about so many visceral reactions. If you don't mind me asking, what were your own thoughts on the Kavanaugh proceedings?
Well, I mean, I think it was a really interesting time in history. I saw a lot of comparisons to the Anita Hill testimony, Clarence Thomas. And there were a lot of folks that were watching it and making those comparisons, rightly or wrongly. And so it was, for me, it was kind of I have a political background, so I take the step back into watching it kind of as an observer and saying, wow, this is a moment in our country's history. And you would think that there would be times that change the course of history. This didn't. And I think we're going to have lessons that we learn going into the future from this. It's not clear to me what they are right now.
And I think the biggest thing is just the reminder that we all need to have probably a little bit more humanity as we look at these issues. Mm-hmm. People can get very one-sided, black and white, and just forget that these are real human beings working through these situations and just trying to think about how this is impacting everybody involved. And especially whenever anybody who has experienced sexual assault or domestic violence shares their story, it's interesting to then look through the feedback that they then receive. If you look through, which it's probably best if you don't, but read through comment sections of any kind of news post or social media posts and really think about the way that people respond to things like that. It just can show how much work needs to be done when it comes to just understanding some of these complex issues.
Paula, given your own background in politics, I do want to get your take on where we are now. We've been hearing a lot recently about political violence. Some are blaming the events surrounding the suspicious packages on rhetoric from President Trump. Councilman John Crawford addressed the issue of political violence and referenced the shooting last year that wounded Republican Congressman Steve Scalise. Is political violence as we see it now something we've been building towards for a long time? Is it a cycle? We saw political violence in the 60s and 80s, and now we're dealing with it again. How do you think we got here, and how do you think we get out of here?
It's not new. We have seen this cyclically through history. I hope it's not the beginning of a new, heavier cycle, but that is to be determined. I will say that the way we get there is paying attention. So many times you find, and this is a very interesting tie, people that are involved in mass shootings, many times they're the perpetrator, the person who is using that violence to express whatever's inside them, many times have been involved in a family that experienced domestic violence. Those are ties that people don't talk about that are proven. And so that's what I think about when I think about this. And I think that doing the work to unearth what's happening with domestic violence and making it safe to talk about, which is happening right now at the same time, might be the way to start to curb some of that, because it gives people an outlet for expressing that is personally and for the rest of the world a safer and healthier way to do.
When it comes to intimate partner violence, are we doing enough locally and statewide to address the problem? What have we done right? I don't want to frame it so negatively.
as a community, we work very strongly together. I just came from the Mayor's Commission on Domestic Violence, which is a group that a roundtable that meets every month and talks about what's happening with violence in Fort Wayne. Great, as an aside, they just launched a website in the violencefortwayne.org that is a great source for anybody that's been a victim of any sort of violence to reach out and find what resources are out in the community. So I think we're doing a lot right. Not that there can't be more done, but we're doing a lot right.
The next step is definitely to start having more conversations around prevention and trying to do real prevention work. So much of what we get caught up in spending our time on is the intervention, because domestic violence is happening so frequently. And there are so many people that are in extremely dangerous situations and need help to safely escape. And so that crisis often takes our priority, because we do want to keep current individuals safe and help them to get through that situation. And so really, to be able to end domestic violence, we have to start looking at how do we truly prevent it in the first place. And true prevention work, it's long, it's slow, it takes time, and that's the hard part of it. It's hard to really put the energy into prevention when it's not going to have immediate results. And so we need to start moving towards having more conversations at young ages of what is a healthy relationship. How do you communicate with your partner? How do you interact? What is acceptable and what's not? Defining respect and having respect to be something that is the norm and that is expected is huge. Something that always stands out to me early on, when I first started at the YWCA, I was the education coordinator, and I was going into classrooms doing our educational programs. And I still remember a day where we were talking about equality and what equality really means and how you can have equality within your relationships. And so I had the students work on defining some different terms that would describe healthy relationships. So things like trust, support, respect, honesty, things that we would hope would be something that we would understand well and that we would have modeled for us. But unfortunately, with the kids I was talking with, they told me flat out, like, that doesn't exist. That's not what real relationships are. That's just in the movies. And so I had this group of teenagers who really did not believe that you could have a healthy relationship, because the only thing that they've ever had modeled for them by adults and other people in their life were unhealthy relationships. So to them, that was normal. Cussing out your partner, yelling at them, putting them down, that's just what happens when you get mad, and that's okay. And so I think having these real conversations about what to expect is really where prevention starts to happen.
And that's the work that's harder to fund, because there's not as direct a correlation into benchmarks and proven results. You know, how do you prove that you had impact on somebody's willingness to accept a toxic relationship? I mean, we have funding for 6 case managers out in the community, but only 2 educators. So there's an imbalance in that work.
Final thoughts for listeners who would want to support victims of domestic violence and the work that you do at the YWCA? Where can we look to?
Well, you can always go to our website, ywcanein.com. Reach out to us. We are so supported and blessed by the support of multiple volunteers, people that do things financially, people that do things with their time, that make donations. We have a huge census in our shelter right now. We are technically equipped to have 66 people in our crisis shelter, and the census has been averaging over 100 for the past several weeks.
Paula Hughes-Shu, Jennifer Rolfe, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As Paula Hughes-Shu mentioned, the Mayor's Commission on Domestic Violence, Rape, and Sexual Assault launched a new website to connect survivors with resources. The website, www.endtheviolencefortwayne.org, offers a Get Help button to quickly provide individuals in immediate danger with information on what to do. A Quick Exit button immediately returns the viewer to Google's homepage if the abuser enters the room while the victim is looking for help, and information is available to individuals in 58 different languages.
The YWCA can be reached at 260-424-4908, and the number for their crisis hotline is 1-800-441-4073. We'll be back with more from WBOI Presents after a short break. Thank you for listening to 89.1 WBOI.